You're listening to a podcast appearing on the Two Guys Talking Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Green Gab. This is Marla Usser, the Green Home Coach, and here with me is Tony.
Tony Pratt from the Sound Room. How you doing, Marla?
I'm great. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right.
Well, you know, we always start these off with something of a story. Today, It was me falling off the ledge. I've been giving you a hard time about not being there to catch me, but you did in the end not let me fall, so thank you.
I tried. It took me a second to realize that, oh, wow, you're falling.
So at any rate, it was just a minor mishap. But what I love about that, Tony, is that's how we are in our business relationship and when we work together and when we do this podcast, is that we've really been there for each other, and I thank you for that.
Oh, so. And you're very welcome.
How's that for a segue?
You know what? That's a great segue. And it's nice, too, because, you know, when I have ideas and things I need to talk about, I can always come to you, and we bounce ideas and feelings and thoughts off of each other, and, you know, there's no judgment, no, you said what?
Yep.
It's just, you know, somebody to listen to.
And so, listeners, find somebody like this. It's very awesome to have a colleague in your life that is that supportive. So I do thank you for that. Thank you for saying that.
You're welcome.
So you and I have been getting ready for this episode. We've been really excited about this one.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun one, I think.
Yeah. So we wanted to just really, we talked to so many people in our work lives and even in our personal lives that are going, what is this green home stuff you guys do? And there's so much quote-unquote mystery around green homes. So we're going to kind of peel back the onion a little bit today, right? Is that a good way to put it?
I think that's a really good way of putting it.
Right.
We're going to talk about one of the basic premises of green design, which is dealing with the actual lot itself.
Right, the lot and site. And here's what I love to think about that, is that it is how the home, or your home more importantly, sits on the land and how it interacts with it. So
yeah, that's a good way to say it.
Yeah, I mean, most of our homes are not pick-up and carry-off kinds, although tiny homes and mobile homes are becoming very prevalent. But even those have an impact on the land, even if it's not a permanent structure.
Anything that sits on the piece of land itself, whether it's a shed, whether it's a house, whether it's a trailer, is going to have some form of impact onto the land.
Absolutely. So kind of what set this conversation up is I work a lot with the National Green Building Standard, which is one of the national green home certification programs that's out there. And it's actually divided up into six categories of different practices or things that you can do in a house, be it in new construction or a remodel, or it can even be a multifamily. It doesn't have to be a single family home. But what's key about all this is that each of those areas, there's five physical areas and then the one homeowner education, the one kind of mind share. And we thought, well, let's just peel back the onion in one of those today. And the lot was the first one. And it makes the most sense to me because you got to figure out where your house is going to go first.
Right. That's like the first thing you start
with. Yeah. Or if it's already there.
Right.
Where it sits, how it's oriented. So it's kind of funny because even when I'm working with people in existing homes, one of the questions I ask them is, which way does your house face? And they all kind of look at me and go, huh?
A lot of people don't realize it.
Well, right. I mean, I have east-west windows, so I get a lot of glare.
The front of my house faces north.
So you get the cold north winds.
I do, but that's why I have the big magnolia trees to help
which protect it. So that's a great instance of showing how all those elements come together to work in a handshake arrangement between the land and what's on the land and the actual structure, your home. So that's a great one. And actually, I love talking to people about landscaping for energy efficiency because we kind of forget you can do those kind of things. And that's been around for centuries.
Longer than that. It's been around for millennia.
One up me, fine.
I didn't mean to.
No. It's all good. So picking where your house goes, if you're in a new construction or what area you want to be in, if you're remodeling or buying a home to fix up, is really a key part, that lot selection, because that also involves the community around it. Like we were talking the other day, what resources are available in the community, mm-hmm. how walkable it is, can you ride, are there sidewalks?
Right.
Pedestrian access?
You could choose to live in like a Kirkwood or a Webster Groves or like a Newtown where everything is within walking distance. You know, you could just walk down the street to the farmer's market or to the post office or to your favorite restaurants or, you know, whatever. it's all right there. You don't even need a car. And by having that walkability, one, it's promoting better health.
Mm-hmm.
It's keeping the community vibrant and keeping commerce local. And the other big part of it is it's a lower impact on the environment.
Absolutely. So the names of the suburbs that Tony's mentioning, for those of you that don't live in St. Louis, are what we call the inner suburbs. So they're inside of our belt around the city. I live in one of the outer suburbs called Wildwood, which is also a planned community. And I also have all of those resources available to me within about a half mile walk. And I love, love, love that. And that's just, that is a great community resource. So that actually makes where my home is situated pretty green.
Which
yeah,
it would.
Cool. Yeah. Newtown, which also Tony was mentioning, or you're mentioning, brand new planned community, little further out, actually was built in the middle of a farmland initially. But they've done some really cool things out there.
They've done a bunch of fun things out there. They have their own post office out there. They have a lot of mixed-use retail with both residential and commercial. So you could live out in Newtown and never even need a car.
And then you add into that, they're connecting all the bikeways, the green belts,
yes,
around the St. Louis metro area. And some of them extend out towards Newtown, if I remember correctly.
I think they extend out past that,
yeah,
onto the Katy Trail, which will take you out to Columbia, Missouri and everything.
Well, I think you go all the way further. You can almost...
maybe to Kansas City?
Not to Kansas City yet, but at least... I think to Sedalia. So you're seeing this kind of development. So the Katy Trail, for those of you not in St. Louis or Missouri, is an old railroad bed that they've converted to a bike trail that goes along the Missouri River throughout the state of Missouri, and it goes by wineries and breweries and nature parks, and it's really, really fun to go on. But I'm seeing these in a lot of areas that I travel to.
Yes.
So this whole idea of reconnecting with nature, reconnecting with the land, is not only being seen in our homes and our communities, but in our recreation choices as well. So
that is true.
I love that. It's a great principle, and it's where it all starts, because your house has to live somewhere just like we do. So the next kind of thing that really kind of ties into this is figuring all this stuff out, where the house lives, how it interacts with the community, and the selections that are made in it happens with a project team, right?
Absolutely.
And that's where you and I get to come into the picture. A lot of times we get to serve as part of that team. But having that well-assembled team, even if you're doing it yourself,
you still have to have people that either understand the codes that you're dealing with, understand what the community is going to allow you to
codes.
Do.
What do you mean codes? And if I'm remodeling on my own, why do I care?
Because depending on the municipality you live in and depending on what you're trying to do, even if you think you want to do it by yourself, if you ever intend to sell that house, somebody's going to stick their nose in and say, was this done to code and did you have a permit?
So when you're doing things, especially concerning electrical or plumbing work,
any kind of structural and
you got help, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So
and that's where
professional
the project
advice highly recommended here. And that should be part of your project team.
Right.
Absolutely. And if you are working a lot of green philosophies in, bringing in a consultant or someone you know that has green experience, like a certified green professional, could be a great addition to your team and to your selections.
Well, I would think if you're doing any kind of a green project, you need somebody that is credentialed, whether it's the builder, the architect, a designer, or another professional.
A consultant. Yeah. Hey, I'm a consultant. I get in there. And I think the thing that's misleading to a lot of people is, well, I'm not really doing a green project. I'm just going to do a few things here and there. Still advise you talking to a professional of some kind to make sure everything's going to work together. Hey, that's a great spot for us to take a quick break, and we'll come back and dig in some more.
Excellent.
Wouldn't it be cool if your advertising could last forever? It can, with perpetual advertising. Here's how it works. Magazine, radio, and television ads are efforts that people might see or hear once, and then they're lost forever. Perpetual advertising provides you with the chance for repeat exposure and replayability weeks, months, even years after it's originally inserted inside a podcast. So even after your advertising is included in a podcast years ago, those efforts are still impactful, providing you with true return on investment. Real impact, thanks to perpetual advertising. Are you ready to change the way you and your company or organization advertises? Find out more and launch a unique perpetual advertising effort right now by visiting twoguystalking.com/sponsors.
Everyone knows what identity theft is, right? Well, maybe not. Learn more by listening at scammercast.com.
Looking for a straightforward user interface and a cost-effective, feature-filled multi-track recording software? Call off the search! Mixcraft from Acoustica has exactly what you're looking for. It's time to include reliable audio creation and editing software with real punch into your projects. Check out Mixcraft now over at acoustica.com/mixcraft and start a new generation of audio creation and editing today.
Hey, Marla, the Green Home Coach, back here gabbing today green with Tony about green homes, green living, and why it matters to you. And doing something fun today, peeling back the onion a little bit.
All about lot design today.
It is. And, you know, I think, well, Earth Day happens every year in April, and, you know, that's kind of the time when we remember that our relationship with the ground is kind of important.
True, and in spring, you know, spring is, you know, home building season again.
Well, that's true.
You know, people start to think about buying a new house, building a new house.
Yep.
And so it's a good time to really discuss this stuff.
That's a good point. It's always a good time to discuss it.
Yes, it
book,
is.
But hey, we'll take it.
When this is your job, it's always a good time to talk about it.
I know. I think I sleep and dream it sometimes, too. Kind of scary. So we've been talking about lots or the land, you know, so where your house lives, the address of your house, I guess. Once we've got a place for it, you know, we know where we're going to put it. The next thing is, what do we do with it? And what do we do with that land? So that lot design would be the official term. Man, this gets into a whole bunch of things.
Yeah, it really does. You have to sit there and factor in the size of the lot.
Mm-hmm.
You have to factor in what the municipality you're going to live in is going to allow you to do with the house, how big the footprint can be.
Like setbacks and stuff, too. That's
setbacks,
a good point.
All of that. Then how will the structure actually face on the lot? Are you in a subdivision or a community where you own so much land that you can turn it however you want to take full advantage of the environment itself?
And that's more frequently seen on larger custom lots.
Correct.
Whereas in a smaller subdivision that's more planned out, you may have a lot more uniformity.
Right. You might have to face the street and that's it. So regardless, you're going to be able to kind of take all of that together through the production team and the project team, who has all the knowledge of what you can do in the community, and then you'll factor in that and plan out how the house is going to sit.
So that's where that team is really important.
Correct.
And if you're building a house, the builder team should be
right. The builder will have everything that he needs.
Right, making these decisions. But so as a homeowner or a home buyer, understanding how these factors come into play really helps you as the home buyer or homeowner to understand the impact.
Right. Because if you understand all of that, then you understand, okay, if I'm buying an existing house, this is why this sits here. It's shaped like this. It's, you know, using this portion of the lot and not that portion of the lot. You'll start to understand all of that.
So a question I so many times hear people say is, oh my gosh, why are they tearing all the trees down when they're developing over there? Why don't they just leave them instead of starting over and planting new trees?
Well, that's a good question, because in the philosophy of more of a green project, you think all of this through. You plan to do as little impact to the existing trees and landscape as possible.
So it can be done.
It can be done.
It's and a lot perceived as being a lot more expensive.
Not necessarily.
It's perceived.
I understand that.
And how many developers do we know that perceive that?
Oh, I would say the majority of them.
Right. Yeah, out by my neighborhood, they're just clear cutting. And unfortunately, it was a field. They didn't have to take the trees down. But the reason they're doing it is to put in all the infrastructure. So they're putting in the big sewer pipes, the utilities, the water, all the water runoff for stormwater management. They're using very traditional building techniques and developing techniques for this property. It is a subdivision.
Right. It's a brand new subdivision, basically.
Right. So all those conveniences that we want in our home, like running water and sewage,
they have to be somewhere. All need infrastructure.
Right. And it's all underneath, usually.
Right.
Which is why they clear cut and grade.
That is true. Whereas if you're going an existing piece of land, more of an infill lot, that's already there.
All the infrastructure is already in.
So you don't have to sit there and say, I have to cut down all the trees.
Wait. So let me make sure I'm hearing you right. So an infill lot is a greener thing to do. But what if I'm tearing that house down to put a new house up?
Oh, that's fine. There are.
Yeah.
There are.
It's fine within a reason, but we really want to encourage people to deconstruct.
Depends on the
and
type
reuse
of lot.
What they can, right?
Yes, it not depends on the house itself.
It. Right.
If you're buying a lot that has a 100-year-old house that is kind of falling apart,
right, you've got to rebuild.
Right. If you're buying a lot to rip down a really, really nice, you know, 20-year-old house,
seen it happen.
That's the wrong thing to do.
Well, we won't get judgmental here, but we urge people, if you do choose to do that, rather than reuse part of the structure, which, by the way, gets into other green practices in other areas, you know, consider the holistic part of that view and how you can use that, all of the resources, the land and the structure, most effectively.
Well, and that's why you have, you know, the Habitats for Humanity and the Restore.
Exactly.
They can come out, deconstruct, and reuse as much of that as possible. The idea is to put as little into the landfill as you can.
Right. So anyway, so when we're doing lot design, we need to plan for, like, erosion. So if there's a sloped lot, we want to make sure all the land, all the topsoil doesn't run away. We want to plan for stormwater.
Right.
This is a hot topic in St. Louis right now.
You know, this is an interesting topic, especially with stormwater, because you remember 6-7 years ago when rain gardens first came in to play in the custom side and more of the green building push of, hey, let's put in rain gardens to help with stormwater retention.
Right. The and our sewer district actually is helping to teach that to help.
But remember the pushback with municipalities at first. They didn't want, remember that.
Yeah.
They were the big ones going, no, no, no. And now, fast forward a few years later, in a lot of municipalities, when you're doing any kind of infill construction, it's mandated. You do it now.
We have partnerships now. Yeah, we have a big emphasis here now on the watersheds and owning your watershed and understanding. So the watershed being where all the water runs off to a creek and then to a river and then on and on down the road or down the creek. Talk about being up a creek. No, sorry. but the stormwater runoff and looking at ways to let that water go back in the earth
first,
as opposed to just running into the rivers, is helping to control and to mitigate things like the big flood we had in Eureka back in December and Valley Park and some of the other areas in St. Louis. So stormwater management is a big component of this.
Absolutely. The idea was always if the lot itself can kind of hold on to the water and ease it back into the system, it would be much better for the
environment. More like nature does.
Yes.
So that's kind of all the infrastructure stuff. And then from there, we go more to how the land will interact with the house as a finished product. So now we're talking more about landscaping and plants that we're putting on the ground. One piece of kind of the green practices that I find very, very useful is reducing the amount of turf or lawn.
Right.
Which I find interesting because we spend all this money, time, and effort watering, feeding, seeding a plant that we then cut back down and emit carbon smoke and all that good stuff back in the air to reduce something that we want it to grow so we can cut it. So grass as a turf and as a landscaping thing is kind of an oxymoron to me anyway. So there's definite, you know, things we look for is using native plants, using other things besides just grass, so garden areas. I know a lot of people that are planting edible gardens now that are beautiful, very ornamental.
I have some friends that what they've done is they've gotten rid of all the grass and put in walking paths and ponds and basically everything else to create a wonderful place to relax and sit, yet there's zero maintenance involved.
Yeah. And that's the real key, I think, with this whole kind of go lawn free movement is that you don't have to maintain it.
And it looks pretty.
It's beautiful. You also can get, I just tried out a grass that's only has to be mowed about once a month and it puts down really deep roots. So it doesn't need a lot of water, doesn't need a lot of maintenance, grows really easily, looks nice, never gets really tall. So you just mow it about once a month. So there's some great options out there. If you just put your thinking cap on and get a little ingenuity going, you can find all kinds of solutions. We're totally going to miss out talking about wildlife. After the break, we're going to pick up on it.
Don't miss the next episode of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. isn't just a television show now on ABC. It's a great new podcast available at agentsofshield.tv. Only on the Two Guys Talking Podcast Network.
It's not nearly as cool as the amber housing the ancient mosquito who had a taste of prehistoric dinosaur blood but it does hold the thoughts of 1993's Jurassic Park, directed by Steven Spielberg. Be sure to check out a podcast 65 million years in the making by driving your custom branded Jeep over to twoguystalking.com/Jurassic Park. It's the Two Guys Talking Perspective Review of Jurassic Park. 1993, directed by Steven Spielberg. Only from Two Guys Talking.
Well, we're still gabbing green, talking about lots. I know that sounds like, okay, that's not going to be very exciting.
But actually, it kind of is.
Well, when There's you look so at it as land, it. Then ground, dirt. I mean, come on, what are all the words we could come up with for lot?
There are not as many as you would think, but this is important.
It's very important. Okay, so don't laugh. But, you know, when I was a kid, we made the requisite dirt pies or mud pies and, you know, usually ate them. And then I thought, you know, when I was, my kids were little, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want them eating dirt. And that really made me start wondering, oh my gosh, what's going into the dirt, you know? And so, I mean, this was as I was really starting to get cognizant about chemicals and green and all this, but it does matter. It matters a lot. And as we've been walking through these different pieces that affect it, you know, the landscaping, and part of the reason native plants are such a big deal is because they don't need a lot of water. They don't need chemicals. They don't need fertilizers and pesticides and all that because they work harmoniously with nature, which encourages mm-hmm. wildlife, means that our kids can eat the dirt, and life moves on.
That's right.
And something of a symbiotic nature. So there's a whole bunch of things we could do with wildlife gardens. And a lot of people around here do like bird gardens or butterfly gardens. We were talking offline about the big push to get the monarchs back, the monarch butterflies.
Because the monarch population is dying.
Yeah.
You know, you can sit there and say, if I want to develop a garden area that is, you know, friendly to certain types of wildlife, you just have to kind of look and see what the habitat is they like, and then plant it.
And we have a beautiful resource. We are so spoiled here in St. Louis because we have the Missouri Botanical Garden.
Yep.
Which, by the way, folks, is available. They do work around the world, so it's available online to anybody. They have a wonderful online resource to look for plants by region. In anywhere you live, you can go online and just search for native landscaping and type in the name of your city, your state. A lot of nurseries have become very, very well-versed on helping you find native. And if you can't find native, at least go with regional appropriate plants and put some color in there and bring in the birds and the bees and the butterflies because they're really good for everything.
Well, the best thing about the native plants is you don't have to do anything to them.
Perennials and native perennials especially are my thing because those keep going. So that's how I get my green thumb. Picking the right stuff to grow, right?
Always helps.
It does. Earlier, we were kind of talking about the infrastructure of a lot. So, you know, underneath the landscaping, underneath the house is all the secret stuff that makes our houses so convenient and work well. But what we didn't get a chance to talk about was how the actual construction of those really does matter and what some ways are, particularly if you're building a custom house where you might have a little more say in how the builder works with the land. Those kind of things could really play a part in your decision-making process of with that home.
You can sit there and as you in your mind, especially if I'm building, you know, an infill house or a custom house, I have some ideas of what my philosophies need to be. As long as I've been educated to where I can speak clearly what I want to the builder, I can weed out the builder that's not going to build that way.
Right.
Or is not open to building that way.
So you might want to look for a builder developer that uses low impact utility placement. So for instance, they might trench instead of clear cutting. They may be able to leave trees and work around the trees rather than, again, clear cutting. They may be able to stockpile topsoil. So when they scrape everything off, here we build basements. So we dig a lot of ground up to build basements. And putting as much of that aside and protecting it so that it can go back is a practice that we look for. So just kind of leaped through that area. But how that stuff comes together is just important as the end product. And that's part of what we want to remind everybody to think about is where possible. And it's not always possible. So don't stress out about it. If it can't all happen, do what we can. But this is one that really makes a difference, especially in the development of a piece of land.
Right. We have to remember that when we get into the world of green building and the philosophy behind it, it is a holistic approach. Every part of the pie kind of combines to bring about the best product.
Yep.
Now, granted, like you said, not in every situation you can do every piece of the puzzle. But if you do as many of them as you can, the end product will be a better result.
Up. Yeah. So that kind of leads us on to the next one, which is, you know, some of the other kinds of things that you could do. You can get really inventive and do green roofs, however you pronounce that, where you have plants or even, I've seen full-blown gardens on flat roofs of commercial buildings.
Mm-hmm. You can do white roofs. You can do, you name it.
So there's all kinds of ways to mitigate heat. So, okay, I'm going to get technical here, but people always say that the city is so much hotter, and it is, because there's so much concrete that it absorbs the heat and it holds it. So one of the philosophies comes in this category of land and lot is use less stuff that's going to hold heat so that we don't have as much of that heat island effect. So that's where a green roof that has plants on it instead of a hard material comes into play. Perhaps you're putting in less concrete and other hard materials in and around the home. Or if you are putting it in, put in stuff that's light colored, like a light colored concrete. So it reflects the heat back off. And that's where the white roof comes in, right? So if we do have to have those materials, then at least we reflect it back off. God, I was just kind of chuckling to myself with the, oh my gosh, I don't believe they're doing this. Watching people put new roofs on house.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, this was in Oklahoma City, which gets up to about 110 degrees.
So it's kind of hot.
105, 110 in the summer on a really, really hot day. It's a dry heat. They're putting black roofs on.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, okay, folks, this is simple physics.
Yeah. Dark colors hold heat, light colors reflect it.
But they like how it looks. Well, and I hate to tell people, but if they run the numbers on what that look is costing them.
I was going to say, did they like their utility costs?
I don't know. I didn't get a chance to talk to the owners. But, folks, use a little common sense here, for heaven's sake. Dark colors absorb heat. I mean, you walk outside on a sunny day in something black, you're going to be warm. That's why we wear light colors in the summer.
Well, now
your house needs to wear it too.
If you're building it in Canada, that might be a little bit more appropriate.
Exactly. Then you want to absorb all the heat you can. So in St. Louis, we're in a mixed climate. So everybody's kind of, which way do I go? Well, we still have more heating degree days than we do cooling degree days, although I think some of our cooling days make up for it.
Yes.
So I'm always one that, which way is going to benefit me the most? Which way is it harder to get rid of the cold or harder to get rid of the heat?
I'd rather be hot than cold. It's easier.
Well, so you want a black roof?
Not really.
You walked right into that one, didn't you? Lots of plantings around a house are a great way to absorb not only heat, they also help purify the air, but they also absorb a lot of sound. You know, you see people putting a sound barrier, putting a row of evergreen shrubs or something on the side of their house where they want more sound privacy as well as more visual privacy. So there's all kinds of ways to think. If you look at it, again, as you were saying earlier, from a holistic perspective about how your house interacts with the land and with the area around it.
Well, I know with my house, I live not too far from the airport, and because of all of the trees and shrubs I have around it, I rarely ever hear a plane.
Hey, that went super fast. Thanks for Gavin here with us today. Just remember, folks, green matters to you, your family and friends and your community. We look forward to you coming back and gabbing with us. Marla at greenhomecoach.com. Catch the show at the new website, too. Bye.